Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. We have a very excellent conversation coming up for you today with pop culture expert John Bastow about the Academy Awards for the year 2014 that just came and went. And we'll be talking about many of the great developments that happened with them. We'll be looking to get John on the phone lines momentarily. Again, John is a tremendous guest. We've had him on the show previously, mini episode number 166. Caught up with him in New York City. That was actually a live face-to-face conversation with him, the one and only time I've had a chance to meet him personally in my life. A tremendous gentleman, somebody who is very well-spoken about not only pop culture, which he covers through his very excellent videos, but additionally fitness, and that is where he initially made his name as the six-pack abs guy and as one of the premier voices for fitness in our country. And you can, of course, always catch up with everything he's got going on at John Bastow on Twitter. The J and the B are capitalized. And you can find, and he's got a link there to his YouTube channel. Additionally, his videos are featured at Buzz 60. And we've had the Buzz 60 CEO on the show previously and talked about the fine array of programming there. And again, of which John Bastow's show is one of the cornerstones over there at that very excellent online network. John, I know, has a number of thoughts about this year's Academy Awards. I received a note today that indicated that all of his predictions came true for the Academy Awards, or at least in the major categories, which still makes him really something of a soothsayer, because these things are very, very hard to pin down. These days, you can't even necessarily go by what happened at the SAG Awards or the Golden Globes or anything like that. It's still difficult to get all of these ones right, and he did, and he really should be commended on that, which is ironic because in discussing with him whether we wanted to book this before or after the Academy Awards, it became clear that after was probably the better way to go, since with everything that he focuses on and covers, which is really more of a pop culture as talking about and reacting to what happened there, I certainly thought in talking to him that was his perception, it was a better way to go rather than what happens ahead of time. But as it turns out, had we done a preview show, he would have predicted all the major categories with us correctly. And I believe he was on the record elsewhere with that. So certainly like to congratulate him on getting that right, which, again, is really no easy feat. If you're going to look at the media personalities out there who had that degree of accuracy, there probably were very few, and he really should be commended by that. We covered this a little bit when he was on the show for mini episode number 166, but among his past accomplishments here, again, as I noted previously, first becoming known in the fitness field, and he also does a lot of motivational speaking along those lines, I believe some modeling as well. And I can personally vouch that his book is outstanding. I have his book. I believe it's the Fitness Made Simple one. I can vouch for it personally, that the very excellent instruction that is given in there. So I see that we have John on the phone lines here. So let's get this started here. Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 387 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We are bringing back a guest that we had on the show for mini episode number 166. Among all of our excellent guests that we've had over a period of time, this gentleman really stands out as one of the most interesting that we've had and one of the most diverse in terms of his own accomplishments, somebody who's really made it in two different fields, the fitness field, first and foremost, where he really carved out a great name for himself, six-pack abs and the like, and now in the field of pop culture. You can, of course, find everything he's got going on at John Bastow on Twitter. That's with the J and the B capitalized. And we have a lot to talk to him about in terms of the Academy Awards that just were held in Los Angeles, and get his thoughts on this from a pop culture perspective. I understand that his predictions were right on the mark for this. There's a lot to talk about with him, and it's a pleasure to get him on the phone lines. Again, it's John Bastow joining us here today, pop culture expert. John, welcome to the program. Good to have you back on, my man.
How you doing, Rick?
Fine, thanks. How are you, John?
I'm doing good, doing good. Glad to be back. Always a pleasure to talk with you, my friend.
Thank you very much, and I would like to start by offering my sincere congratulations. As it came to my attention today, I believe you were correct on at least all of the major categories with your predictions for the Academy Awards. Very nicely done. It's very difficult to do, of course. The SAG Awards, the Golden Globes, those are no sure predictor these days. So whatever your formula was, it was a winning one.
Yeah, it's funny. Your production coordinator, another buddy of mine, Steve Cervillo, had sent out a little thing for me to fill out for the Best Actor, Best Actress, Supporting Actress, and Best Picture beforehand. He goes, "Oh, we have to have your predictions before the show. And after the show, I'm like, oh, all right, well, this will be good. So got lucky this year, I guess.
Well, Steve had passed that along to me today, and I was very impressed when I read that. And again, very, very difficult to get all these right. I want to get your thoughts on some of the winners here. But stepping back, taking a look at it from a pop culture perspective, do you feel, looking back on it, that the big story of it is Ellen and the hosting job that she did in terms of both the pizza stunt, the selfie, the whole tone that she brought to the proceedings? My sense is that's probably what people are talking about most around the water cooler today, even more so than some of the winners. What's your thought on that?
Oh, I think she definitely did an awesome job. I mean, she made it more relatable. She brought in social media. I mean, crashing Twitter, that's going to be a big thing just by the fact that she crashed Twitter is its own story, let alone just the Oscars. Because a lot of times the Oscar buzz is the outfits, and then all of a sudden everything dies. But, I mean, she not only had the selfie, she had a passing Pharrell's hat to get money as a tip for the, the pizza delivery guy, which was hysterical. The people, obviously, ordering the pizza, which was funny because half of them didn't eat it because Oscar folk don't do carbs. I mean, I was just watching to see if they keep the camera on long enough for somebody to take a bite, which was, shocking. And the funniest thing when that happened was Matthew McConaughey's wife, Camilla Alves, who was in that very pretty long dress with the shoulder thing on it and everything. It was funny when he was getting a pizza, where Jared Leto was getting a pizza and the guy was delivering it over Camilla Alves. I thought she was going to punch Jared Leto if any drop spilled on that dress.
And I think we certainly all could have understood if she did.
Her face was just like, "You better keep away from me with that greasy pizza." It was hysterical. The best thing of the night, though, I'm going to just say it now in case we don't get to it later. My favorite thing of the entire night, from every standpoint, and just also, I just thought it was excellent, and he's gotten a little bit of flack on it afterwards, but was Jimmy Kimmel attacking cyber haters and cyber bullies, walking through the TV at the people who do all the mean tweets. That was hilarious.
Yeah, and I saw that he got a lot of good feedback about that online from a lot of pundits. I have seen the other side of the spectrum where folks are saying, he's out there sort of putting out his own parodies of things here, and there's maybe some people that might feel some of what he does is a little bit mean-spirited. So you didn't feel that was all hypocritical on his part? You don't fall in that camp?
Not really. Well, first of all, I mean, unless you gave me a specific example, I've seen a lot of his parodies, and I've seen a lot of his things where he does little, videos, and, people have eaten the Halloween candy on the kids, or, for instance, he'll go to Fashion Week and have pictures of people, fake designers, and asking people questions about them, and one mm-hmm. person will have, one designer will have, doo-doo on everybody's head, and saying, "Well, this designer puts doo-doo on the head." I mean, it's funny. I've not seen anything super mean-spirited, even when he got into a fight, that Twitter feud with Kanye West that I had to cover for Buzz 60, and some of the pop culture stuff that I do for AOL and NDN and Daily Motion and everything like that. I've not seen anything particularly mean-spirited like the tweets that he's referring to when he jumped through the TV at those other people. People just like – he was giving examples which were actually watered down because the ones he probably wanted to give wouldn't have made it on TV. But like talking about, Meryl Streep, looking like a deranged substitute teacher or something along those lines. It's just purely negative. It's not even from like a comical aspect. It's very mean-spirited. And anybody in the public eye, granted, we're going to take anytime you put yourself out there, you're putting yourself open to negativity and stuff like that. But and that's fine for us. But a lot of times with Twitter, you're talking about people writing extremely nasty, extremely mean things that are directed towards other kids, other people that don't defend themselves the same way. And that's what a lot of times when people feel trapped by social media, that's why a lot of times you see read stories about kids being bullied and taking their lives. So it's not just a surface type thing. So when he did it, as far as if you're going to send out hate, if you're going to send out hate on Twitter or hate on social media, period, then whatever you get back is God bless. You know, you open the door to yourself. So you give hate, you can get it back. And a lot of times, to be honest with you, man, if you look at the profile pictures of the people who are spewing hate, if they even have profile pictures up, they look like the people who he had playing those parts. Okay? Those are the ones. It's never the ones that are accomplished. It's never the ones that are very attractive. It's never the ones that are talented people that are out there spewing negativity. It's always useless waste of skin and hair who are unhappy with their own lives who are spreading it. So, as I say, they can say he's being hypocritical. They can say that, you know, he went a little bit too far. But that's what's out there, and that's what's attacking other people. I mean, with celebrities, you take it with a grain of salt, but they're also attacking other people because they have a veil of anonymity. And as soon as that veil of anonymity is pierced, these people collapse like a house of cards.
Yeah, they do. And it is an excellent message going after the trolls. And, yeah, I don't have any specific examples to cite because, yeah, the take is not my own. I didn't really have a sense of it one way or another, but I did see that take online from a couple of the critics today talking about Kimmel. But, yeah, I think even they would have to agree there's a big line of difference between anything he's done and anything that a lot of trolls have done. And, yeah, I've tasted it. I know that you have, and a lot of us have, and it's not a fun thing. So, yeah, it is good to see somebody going after them. There is a take that I would like to ask you about, circling back around to Ellen for a moment here, and that being from another longtime FDH Lounge guest and associate, Mark Berman from TV Media Insights, a gentleman who I really respect. He would sort of had a little bit of a complaint about Ellen because he's looking at it as an Oscars traditionalist, and the splendor of the ceremony and everything in the way that it's traditionally been. And I don't really have a dog in the fight because I'm not a huge Ellen person and I'm not a huge Oscars tradition person, but I look at it, John, like I sort of bemoan that a little bit with the World Series. I'm the old guy shaking his fist at the kids every year that Fox isn't treating it with enough splendor and majesty, and damn it, they should play orchestral music between innings, you know? And like, so I kind of understand that take. Now, you were saying that you felt that she made it a lot more relevant in the social media age. So you seem to come down on the other side of the fence from Mark on this, but I find it to be a very interesting kind of dichotomy there between looking at the tradition of it on the one side and what you have to do to keep it relevant on the other side, even if at times it feels a little bit more like an MTV awards show.
Well, I mean, let's put it this way. I can speak from a viewpoint of not being a huge Ellen fan. I've never watched her show in full. I think she's great. I don't think there's anything wrong with her. I just don't happen to, you know, I'm not around usually when her show is on, and it's not, you know, I guess compelling enough for me to DVR. And saying that, as not a huge Ellen fan, I thought she was phenomenal. I thought she was excellent. There's been many odds. Sometimes when you make it too highbrow, you alienate a certain level of the audience. I found her to be down-to-earth, relatable, comical, but she also gave it reverence. I thought her monologue in the beginning was hysterical. I thought the little, the little bit she did with Jennifer Lawrence, you know, being accident-prone and stuff like that, and then saying, you know, oh, we don't want to bring it up, but let's just show the clip. I mean, little things like that. It was just very conversational and very, very relatable, which is something we've not had before. And just because something has been a certain way for a certain amount of years doesn't mean it has to continue always in that way. There can be little deviations and change is always hated at first, and then all of a sudden it's embraced. And I think that Ellen did a phenomenal job in making something that is a standing tradition, the Oscars, reinventing it in a more user-friendly and more relatable way. I mean, there's been a lot of Oscar ceremonies before I got involved in pop culture that I've fallen asleep during. And this is one that kept my attention throughout.
Well, absolutely. She did err on the side of that, no question about it, of trying to keep it relatable and keep it something that people would be talking about, and in a good way, as opposed to a couple of years ago, that Franco and Hathaway performance where it was the buzz at the water coolers the next day, but for all the wrong reasons, it seemed like, in terms of how people were critiquing them. So it seemed like, again, for something that was really kind of adventurous on her part as far as the way that she did it, it almost seemed to not have a lot of downside to it, because you're going to get a couple of people who are grumbling as traditionalists, but if you weren't a traditionalist and you were watching it, you were probably fairly entertained. So I think she probably figured she was going to come out ahead of some of the recent hosts anyways.
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I mean, they tried to change it to try to engage a younger demographic with James Franco and Anne Hathaway, and that bombed miserably. But, you know, Ellen has a universal appeal, I think. Once again, also, I mean, I sound like her biggest proponent, and it's coming from someone who's never really watched a full version of her show, but I like her. I like her a lot, and I think that she's very, very good and engaging for this type of show. I mean, it was hysterical, I thought, when she compared compared the Oscars to the Hunger Games, and she talks about, pretty much everybody's starving, we're all pitted against each other, and Jennifer Lawrence is here. So I mean, she brought in some really clever things, and that was interesting. And when she came out in the funny outfit, or she came out in other outfits, and she goes, "Yes, I changed. Look at that." You know, it a lot of times people are thinking that when the other Oscar hosts who are more elegant and more poised, let's say, not that Ellen isn't poised, but I mean, who are more poised and prim and proper, don't even address the fact that they're in 27 outfits for the night. You know, it's never even brought up. It's just seen, and then everybody's talking about it. Ellen sort of brings what you're talking about into the ceremony. I mean, there's a lot of people who probably during the ceremony, and I was surprised she didn't bring up this, because I thought one of the best jokes would have been when she brought the pizza, something like, "You guys are already in the dress. You've already done the red carpet. Now's the time to enjoy. You can finally eat something." I mean, that would have been, that would have been funny, because that's immediately what I was thinking. Because, I mean, getting ready for Oscar and Oscar prep is all about deprivation and looking good in the dress, and also they're nervous, the anxiety tie and stuff like that. And having the pizza was just such a release, and it was just so funny that it would have been hysterical to see some of the trimmer actresses just take a bite of it, just for the humor value.
Yeah, if you go back and look at the replays of it, I'll bet you what we would find, it's probably mostly the seat fillers that were probably actually chowing down on the
seat. I'm sure. I mean, when my adrenaline, if I was sitting in that audience and I was nominated for an award, I mean, when my adrenaline's up, I have no appetite at all. So I'm sure that my seat filler, when I went to the bathroom, I would have given him my piece right there.
And right now, I've got a mental image of Cosmo Kramer sitting there at Tux, just wolfing down piece after piece of this thing here. And it did look pretty good for my TV.
That would have been hysterical, wouldn't that have been funny, as if she had the bit, but she kept going back to it, where you'd see this one actress taking a bite of it, and then she's like inhaling it piece after piece, and they kept going back at different times. Sort of like when Julia Louis-Dreyfus, when they just did, I forget, which award show was it? Was it the Golden Globes? I think it was the Golden Globes.
I think so, yeah.
When Tina Fey and Amy Poehler were hosting, and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, first of all, wasn't sitting with the TV people. She was sitting with the film people with sunglasses on. And then another time she ordered like a hoagie. I think she was eating like a submarine sandwich or something when they went to her, when they went back to her. That was a very cute bit. They also make it very relatable and do fun things. They also do clever backbiting things based on people who say negative things about them. Like, for instance, when Lena Dunham had commented about, rather Taylor Swift had commented something about, I think Tina Fey had said something about Taylor Swift, and then Taylor Swift had written back on Twitter, women who don't support other women have their own special place in hell. And then when Tina Fey had mentioned something about, I guess it was Taylor Swift's song or dress or something, or something, and she brought it back to that saying, and we're going to hell. But, they bring back the comments that were made against them on previous shows, which makes it sort of interesting.
Yeah, it does. It's a way of kind of going back to it and bringing it into the present and making it something that relates to what's going on in that moment there. So you're right about that. That's
an
interesting
way to do it. And also basically bringing back the memes. I mean, things that were big trending topics, they then bring back, which everybody's thinking of at the time, at least anybody who's engaged on Twitter, Facebook, or whatever. When you get an ongoing thing about it, it just, I think, once again, makes it more relatable because the people had seen this. This is something they had been talking about with the last show. and, you know, and then you get the retort.
Exactly. It's a way of repurposing it and really keeping it relevant that way. I hadn't thought of it that way before, but that is kind of an intriguing way to look at it. Before we get to the substance of any of the awards, any thoughts on any of the outfits last night? I mean, I saw some stuff today where people were kind of highlighting, like, oh, well, look at Kate Blanchett on the red carpet with this, beige gown. And I'm thinking to myself, well, how much of that's revisionist thinking because she won the big prize there? You know, I didn't watch it closely enough to see if people were commenting at the time and thought that she had one of the catchier dresses. But what were your thoughts? Was it anybody that really stood out from the little bit that I saw just looking at the red carpet stuff? I didn't catch anything that I thought was necessarily going to be causing people to talk the next day, but I might have missed something.
Well, I agree with what you say, about revisionist history, meaning like all of a sudden if somebody wins, then you get to talking about their dress or whatever.
Right.
So that's why I write my notes when they're doing the red carpet on E, before anybody has a chance to win anything. Kate Blanchett, first of all, she's always elegant, she's always graceful, and I mean, I personally, I mean, I'm not a huge fashion guy, but, you know, I've been to a bunch of fashion weeks, and I know what I like. I thought she looked extremely elegant and amazing. As Lupita Nyong'o killed it, Lupita has been huge. She's gone from obscurity to a known-name, award winner, recognized actress, award-winning actress, in the matter of one award season. It's funny because she had that huge pivotal role in 12 Years a Slave, but I just happened to see Nonstop, which was a movie with Liam Neeson. And Lupita Nyong'o plays a very forgettable flight attendant. And the thing is, she went from parts like that to now being an Oscar award-winning actress, and she largely did it not only by winning the awards, but by rocking it on the red carpet with a solid color every single show and nailing it and always being different. I mean, the Golden Globe, she started out with that red number, which was stunning. Then she went to a bunch of other ones, which were all equally stunning in different ways, and then she hit it with this sky blue pastel one, which was a plunging neckline with on an actress with a larger, let's say, more ample breast size. Everybody would have said it was slutty and horrible and, too revealing. But on her, with her model-type body, was perfect, was just absolutely perfect for her. And then when she did the little dance, when Pharrell Williams goes into the audience and he's singing Happy, and she does her little moves with the dress and holding it up, I mean, she rocked it. I thought she rocked it. The guys pretty much, I mean, I guess the code of the night is people wanting to, catch attention was white tux. Tux was with the guys, and the girls were in pretty much silver or nude, or as you said, beige, except for like Lupita Nyong'o. But that was one of the definite trends. Charlize Theron, I mean, not really nominated for anything, and I've been at different events with her, a very nice lady. I mean, she did one of the cardinal sins in fashion, which is wear black on the red carpet, because black tends to get lost on the red carpet, even though it's good at other events. And she rocked it, though. She wore a black dress that made your eyes pop. And that just shows, the gravitas of that lady of being able to carry a dress like that, because that's not that's a color that most people shy away from on the red carpet, which was pretty interesting. Jessica Biel, who wasn't really nominated for anything, looked really hot, I thought, in a silver dress she had on. But I think the fashion statement of the night, besides Lupita Nyong'o and the white guy, the guys in the white tuxes, is Pharrell was just shinful. He was in a shinful outfit, showing off his shins in those little knickers he was wearing, and it was no socks, all shins. That was pretty funny.
Well, and you mentioned all the white tuxes. Anytime there's anything like that, I'm always looking to see in the crowd there, is anybody going to be going super retro, like back at my prom when I was rocking the white tux with the aqua cummerbund and the aqua bow tie, Miami Vice style? I didn't see any of that last night.
Actually, he wasn't on the red carpet, but I saw him, like, he was presenting or doing, I forgot exactly what he was doing. But, and a lot of people may not like it, but I liked it because it was very flashy. But Jim Carrey, who I really never liked anything he's ever worn, had an amazing shiny, like, slate blue tux on, and I thought that was really funky. I mean, if he was nominated for something, if he was like, more of a focal point of the awards, that might have gotten a lot of criticism, but I thought it was awesome.
I didn't see him. Please tell me he was rocking the Dumb and Dumber bowl cut with that, because that would have been amazing.
No. He looked good. That was something, actually, it was funny, because normally, a lot of times I may chicken out and wear, like, the straight tux and everything to these events, but if I had my first choice in something, that actually, and I'm in a ballsy type mood, I would have worn what he had on. His shiny slate blue tux was not anything from Dumber and Dumber, and it looked great. As I said, I've never commented on anything he's ever worn before, but I just thought that, I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I missed that, but I'll have to go back and check out some of the pictures.
Check it out in the pictures. It was like a slate blue sort of shiny tux, and on TV. I don't know what it looks like in the pictures, so I can't vouch for it in the pictures. But on TV,
yeah,
it looked awesome.
Yeah, you're definitely getting me intrigued here with what he must have looked like. But it was something I
would have worn that instead of, especially if I was nominated, and once again, in a ballsy mood, because you have to really own that to wear it. I mean, own it meaning like, I'll still give it back because I'd rather get it for free and give it back. But I mean, own it meaning like when you're there, you have to have the gravitas of walking like you own the room and that in order to make it work. But if I was nominated for something big, I would have done that to stand out from the sea of white.
Well, the man fully commits in his comedy. I guess he's going to fully commit in his fashion also. Yeah, you can't go halfway. You got to own it. He's got to approach that the same way that he does with some of his spastic comedy. And clearly he was owning it painting it.
Which, once again, I'm not a fan of, but I was certainly a fan of that outfit.
Well, how's this for a segue? Once upon a time, we might have thought, well, some people anyways, that it would be equally outlandish to consider Jim Carrey winning the Academy Award for Best Actor as perhaps Matthew McConaughey. Maybe I'm exaggerating slightly.
Agreed.
But
no, I agree with you 100%. At the days
really?
Of confusion, I agree with you 100%. But it's almost like Cher back in the day. I mean, back in my parents' day and stuff like that. I mean, even when my friends, in school and stuff like that said, oh, Cher is like an icon and everything. I mean, my parents used to say, well, when she started out, they treated her as a joke. I mean, she was considered a joke in the beginning, much like Suzanne Somers on Three's Company was sort of a joke. And then all of a sudden she becomes a multi-billionaire with, a giant multi-brand empire, and Cher becomes an icon. Matthew McConaughey, I think, is honestly doing the same thing. I mean, he started out in, like, stoner films, and nobody would have taken it seriously, much like, I guess, Jake Gyllenhaal started out in Bubble Boy. But there is a change. And that's what I'm talking about even when you say about the Ellen thing. You say, like, well, everybody says, oh, you know, she wasn't honoring it. She changed it a little bit. There's always going to be resistance to change, and then you're going to be praised for change once it's accepted. But it's not going to be immediately accepted and immediately praised by everyone. Same thing with Matthew McConaughey. He went through a career arc. His career has changed. He started out in one thing, and he has grown and grown and grown as an actor. And then he did such a dramatic transformation for Dallas Buyers Club, where he became the role. And he, as he talks about in the after-show interviews, and has also talked about in several magazines, I mean, the funding of the project, he was involved in every aspect of it. This was his baby. He was so committed to knowing about every step, even if other people were handling different steps, but just being involved in everything because that was the passion. And that passion shows through, and that passion wins awards.
Well, and that's what's really exceptional about the accomplishment that he had there. I mean, I saw James Lipton on TV this morning on a show trying to kind of make sense of it and walk his way through it a little bit. But in my own mind, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking here, there are so few comparisons out there in American culture to what it is to win Best Actor or Best Actress. So you can't even look at it like a sports MVP for a season because it's much bigger than that. If you're going to look at it anyway, maybe it's like being the heavyweight champion of the world in boxing when that still meant something. But you're basically in the Hall of Fame at this point. If you've won that, you're on a list of the greatest actors and actresses of all time, and nobody can ever take that away from you, unlike a Heisman Trophy or something where it can be subsequently. So he's on that list now. I mean, Kate Blanchett won last night for Best Actress, and I think we all looked at it and was like, yeah, okay, she was going to make that list at some point. And it was just a matter of time. Nobody blinked when she won it, not least of which because her role that she played was so great this time. But it's a numbers game, right? She's going to win it one of these times because she is universally recognized as being that great. McConaughey scratching his way up onto that tier of actors is, as you said, truly phenomenal.
It's funny. I mean, not to leave topic a little bit, but it reminds me so much. You ever see these events where, like, you see, like, the predicted people that are supposed to be on top, and then all of a sudden somebody just sneaks through the pack and snatches it and then runs away with it?
Okay. Yeah.
back in the Olympics, back in the day, when I was in, like grammar school or junior high or something like that, there was, I'll never forget this story, there was a figure skater, Sarah Hughes, who won at the Olympics, won gold. She was not expected to win gold. It was between other competitors. I don't remember, Surya Bonaly or Nancy Kerrigan or Tanya Hart. No, Michelle Kwan, who will always be in history as a great skater, but they always, whenever they say Michelle Kwan's name, they always say, never won an Olympics. That's all you hear. Anyway, Sarah Hughes was from America, and she was like the also-ran type of thing who was, you know, competing for us. All of a sudden, she does a couple of phenomenal performances, blows away the competition of what they thought she could do, sneaks up to win the gold, just snatches the gold out of everyone's hand. She becomes a little icon. And then all of a sudden, I never heard her skate again. She didn't become like the dancing turnip in the ice capades or anything like that. But it's like, that's the way I would be if in that type of award. You know, if you win that type of award, especially when you win it against all odds, you just stop because you already won the ultimate. You can only go down from there. And I think that's what Matthew McConaughey did with this award, but he just repeated it over all the awards because he did so well in all the other award shows too. But he came out of the blue. The only difference is everybody knew the movie was good. Everybody knew the movie had buzz. So there was already talk about him as being a possible contender for the Oscar. So it's not like he totally snatched it like Sarah did completely out of the blue with nobody talking about it. But, you know, that movie was a tour de force for him. And I think the main reason that what resonated about it besides his performance was his passion. I think that was what resonated with a lot of the voters in the Academy and in these other award shows.
Yeah, he did a tremendous job. And I have to say, if somebody would have told me ahead of time, before this year, before the last couple of years, that there was going to be a Matthew M. winning an Academy Award for Best Actor, I would have thought two-time Cast Lounge guest Matthew Modine, quite frankly, I would have given him better odds. But McConaughey did a heck of a job. I can't take anything away from him. And you're right with your comparison to the Olympics. There's a handful of sports where the gold medal really means something, and it really makes you a mainstream kind of a person. And that's kind of the same thing here. Just that level of accomplishment, winning the Academy Award for Best Actor, for Best Film, again, you had McConaughey's film right there for it. 12 Years a Slave ends up coming out the winner, as we covered previously. No surprise to you, because you had the winners going in. But what were your thoughts on that? I mean, very, very stiff competition, as it is a lot of times, because it's the number one prize that a movie can snag. But you could have had like three or four of them, I thought, where nobody would have blinked if they had won the prize.
I just think because of the subject matter, and also remember, when you are entering these awards, granted the Academy is given screening copies of all this stuff, and a lot of the awards are, but they're also given selected clips, okay? And it's very, very hard. Something like 12 Years a Slave has so many unbelievably powerful, unbelievably emotional, unbelievably impactful clips, that if you're going by clips alone, it's a very, very hard movie to beat. It's a very hard movie because it's a relatable thing in history to obviously Afro-Americans who've gone through this, and it's relatable to everyone else from history and studying it, and to see it on the screen like that, almost like, you know, seeing like a biblical story, like with the Passion of the Christ or something like that. It's the type of thing that's, you know, very hard to beat, like by something like The Wolf of Wall Street. I mean, granted, as good of a movie as that may be, and as funny, I thought Jonah Hill was hilarious in that movie. I thought he was unbelievable, so deserving of his nomination. But I mean, that type of movie, it just can't beat it in the majority of people's votes.
Well, you started to touch on a little bit of something there with the voting, and I'd like to explore that a little bit. And this question on my part might get taken as a little bit snarky, maybe from a Midwest or a fairly conservative guy like myself, but I want to put it out there nonetheless. You have a slave picture that wins for Best Picture. You have the HIV picture where you're snagging Best Actor, Best Supporting Actor.
It's
Hollywood, again,
film.
Politics are what they are. the messages in these movies? Is it fair to ask how much that might have tipped the scales one way or another in terms of what they were conveying?
I think it definitely tips the scales, no matter what anybody
okay.
thinks. I think it definitely tips the scales over something that's going to be a comedy that makes you laugh, that's considered somewhat frivolous, as good as it may be. And whether that's right or wrong, I just think it is the way it is. I'm not making a value judgment on it. I'm just stating what it is. And, I mean, it's very hard to beat that. I mean, unless the film is incredibly boring and is incredibly unnoticed, which neither of those films were, Dallas Buyers Club and 12 Years a Slave both had a huge amount of buzz. It's very, very hard to, come up against them when they have also such strong performances and such strong technical merit as well as artistic merit. I think that is the combination that's hard to beat. And granted, you may say, and I would, watching something like The Wolf of Wall Street may be a more enjoyable movie because even though it has moments where you laugh out loud and you actually feel good as opposed to horrified to look at the screen. In the end, I go back to the word gravitas, meaning like what gives you the most powerful emotion. Is the laughter the most powerful emotion, or is the impact the most powerful emotion? Is the regret, is the horror the most powerful emotion? And I think that's what
Absolutely.
The voters choose on.
That's a great point because, again, yeah, I don't know that I haven't seen 12 Years a Slave. I doubt if I did, I would call it one of the most entertaining films of the year, but that's not what they're shooting for. They're trying to convey a story. They're trying to tell a story. It's an artistic kind of a thing. And, yeah, again, that's what really kind of separates this, say, from the Grammys, where you have that level of commerce involved and things that are top sellers are always going to be right in there. It almost kind of works the other way with the Oscars, doesn't it, that it's not necessarily a bias towards the art house, but it certainly doesn't hurt you. In terms of that, they're looking for that level of storytelling and what they're going for.
Oh, I agree. I mean, in through history it is. And, I mean, sometimes you're going to, get a breakout hit that does it. I'm trying to remember. I know it got a lot of buzz, but this goes back before my time. I was just trying, because I was just thinking, when I mentioned that line about, comedies, I was just trying to think in my mind about the last big comedy to really do something big in the Oscars. And I'm going back to like Dustin Hoffman and Tootsie as far back as that. Just with research, because I'm looking on searches and stuff like that. I don't remember any comedy. That did extreme. That was like a blowaway hit that you could say owned the Oscars type of thing.
Right.
So
it doesn't tend to happen with that comedies. It just doesn't. You're right about that.
I think people, and it's a horrible, and pun intended, but people tend to laugh them off. As good as they are, because some of the things are, and people hate me for saying this, but whatever. I mean, when I go to the movies, I actually like seeing things like Bad Grandpa. Okay, I mean, when I look at this year of movies, there's very few movies that I enjoyed more than Johnny Knoxville's Bad Grandpa. There's very, very few movies that I enjoyed more than his Bad Grandpa. I thought that was unbelievably well done as far as being able to pull off those pranks, and they were also hysterically funny. The fact that it was filmed almost like a documentary, because that's how it had to be filmed, and it was all done with people that were not in on the gag. Things like that could overlook that because, they think of it as crude, or they think of it as, just like a YouTube video put in movie form. But there's so much effort that goes into something like that, and it's also hysterically funny. I mean, that's one of the only movies that I laugh out loud during the theater and, am laughing scenes later at something that happened a half hour ago in the movie.
Well, again, you're talking to a guy who's a big Jackass enthusiast. I celebrate the entire franchise. So, yeah, I'm picking up what you're putting down. I actually haven't gotten a chance to see that yet, but I am
hilarious.
Very looking forward.
I do not like Jackass at all. I do not like when they jump in fecal matter or sewage. and I could not watch a single episode of that once again. But Bad Grandpa blew me away. That was hilarious. And it's funny because we did a prank video for Culture Pop, my series on Daily Motion, YouTube, Blinks, Blip, and a lot of other places. And instead of doing straight Oscars, we actually did fake nominees and read the Razzies nominees as Oscar nominees, and you'd be so surprised at how many people we had believing Lindsay Lohan's The Canyons was going to win Best Picture.
Wow.
If you watch it, we were reading the Razzies nominees, and we had Tyler Perry as nominated in Best Actress. And at one point, the people are like, "Yeah, Tyler Perry," and I'm like, obviously, having a vagina is not a prerequisite for being in the Best Actress category.
Right.
But, because the Razzies, they span all things. But it was just funny reading the nominees, and then we're like, you know, when people are saying, "Are these the?" There were only a handful of people, not even a handful. I'm talking like two or three that actually questioned the nominees. That actually questioned that Lindsay Lohan was really nominated for The Canyons. you know, or that Grown Ups 2, Adam Sandler's movie, was nominated for Best Picture, which I believe it should be, because Adam Sandler is one of my favorite people in the world, because the two things that matter most to me in this world are loyalty and trust. And what I love about that man is in every movie he does, no matter how critically panned it is or whatever, he puts in all his friends, his family, and the people who helped him on the way up, his inner circle. And for that matter, he could do anything on screen, and I will always praise it in my movie reviews. Always. He gets a pass with anything he does, because most people in Hollywood are true scum and cannot be trusted as far as you can throw them, at least the ones that I've met. And he breaks the mold in the sense that he is so trusted and so loyal to his friends, his family, and the people who helped him, and he's so much about giving back that any of his movies get a pass in my book.
I hear you. I'm a big Sandler guy as well. I'm looking here at some of the past winners. I mean, the last maybe true comedy that I see that would have won one would have been Annie Hall in 77. But, again, anything Woody Allen,
Tootsie, Tootsie was asked, 77, like, that goes way past
I don't think
my
Tootsie
time.
Won for Best Picture. I don't think it got a Best Picture.
But there was some buzz about it with the Oscars. So I was just looking at it. Did Hoffman win Best Actor in it then?
No, you might be thinking of that. He might have won that. That's right about okay. when Kramer versus Kramer won. So there was a Hoffman movie that won. But yeah, anything Woody Allen is an artsy kind of humor. It's not the fart humor of an Adam Sandler that I tend to like. So, you know, it's a different kind of animal. Rocky won it in 76, but the initial Rocky was pretty artsy, which people tend to forget. You know, we lump it in with the later ones. Certainly Rocky IV wasn't going to be taking home Best Picture
anytime soon. Okay, but going back to my point, Rick, the initial Rocky, go back to what was the P word I said before? Passion. That,
yes.
I think, even though that also was before my time, that Rocky, won because I know Sylvester Stallone, that made his career, and whatever he did afterwards, that got panned or whatever, he was balls to the wall, and even when I've gone on manager meetings, agent meetings, and stuff like that, people give examples of Sylvester Stallone just not accepting no, just busting in every door because Rocky was turned down by every studio, every producer, and stuff like that. But he had the passion and the drive to get that made, much like Matthew McConaughey had the passion and drive to make Dallas Buyers Club happen with his team.
Absolutely.
But
man,
Sylvester Stallone didn't even have a team. Back in those days, from what I heard, Sylvester Stallone didn't even have a team. He just had balls and would not accept no for an answer. And that's, I think when that actually happened and came to fruition, and then Rocky also became a box office success, I think that opened the Academy's eyes a lot, because this is a picture that these Academy members are in the business. So they know how many times, especially the older members, know how many times this thing was probably turned down. And they were probably even surprised to see it, get it to the movies, let alone get it to the Oscar ballot box. And at that point, you've just got to tip your hat and say, and give it to the guy, you know, for doing the impossible. Because what I heard, Rocky was like a one in a million shot, and that, you know, nobody was able to ever create something from nothing the way he did without a team and experienced people behind him in the business. And, you know, so that's a huge success story. But once again, it comes back to passion.
Absolutely, and as the sands are now out of the hourglass for us here, John, to go full circle, something that Sylvester Stallone has in common with you, John Bastow, scratching and clawing and building a name for yourself in not just one field in fitness, but in pop culture, becoming notorious as a pop culture expert here. Of course, people can check it out at AOL, Daily Motion, Buzz 60. I know that back at your Twitter feed, you kind of direct everyone to the right places to go there, at John Bastow on Twitter. A true pleasure, again, to have you on the show, John. Don't be a stranger. Really appreciated the conversation. Love to talk to you again here sometime soon. You take care, my friend, and thank you for your great insights today.
You are awesome, Rick. Anytime you want me back, you just give a shout.
Wonderful. We will do so. I really appreciate it. Thank you all, everybody, for tuning in today to mini episode number 387 of the FDH Lounge.